Father, we just come before you now to ask for your guidance and blessing and help in this week. I have put a lot of thoughts together on paper, and I just pray that you'll help me to get these said, to make them enough a part of our lives that we feel like they're real things. And probably the problems that we've faced are typical of a lot of people in this room, and we're certainly not going to solve everybody's problems this week. And yet, Lord, we would like to have some input in maybe one or two areas that would help us with some things, that would encourage us in some areas, and would certainly help us continue to maintain and mend and build really solid marriages, commitments that are for a lifetime. And God, may you somehow speak to our hearts and our lives and our hopes and our dreams and all of those things in this week. And we'll thank you for that which is accomplished in the name of Christ. Amen. For those of you that don't know us well, let me give you just a quick rundown on the Craning household. So Carol is working today and tomorrow at the hospital. My wife is a nurse and works in intensive care at Redlands Community part-time, works a couple, 3 days a week, and she'll be here from Wednesday on. She'll be here in the daytime and jump up and wave her arms every once in a while when I say something that she knows is not true. So today and tomorrow, I feel relatively safe saying just anything. But from then on, I'll have to be more careful. So my wife, Carol, and I have been married 28 years this year. People say to me, do you and Carol have a good marriage? Yes, we have a good marriage. Other people say, do you have a great marriage? I used to say, well, you know, I hesitate to say it. That sounds a little, you know, egotistical to say we have a great marriage. But I want to tell you, I do a lot of counseling, and over the last 6 months, just in the counseling I've been in, I think Carol and I have a spectacular marriage. You got to have something to compare it to. When you get into counseling situations with four or five couples that are really on the rocks, you start saying, hey, our marriage is better than good. It's better than great. It's sensational. And I am impressed with what we have. Now, compared to what you have, ours may not be all that good. I don't know. But compared to what some of you have, ours is great. I would guess that in a crowd this size. But I'm excited about what we have. We're right at the point of hitting the empty nest syndrome. Our oldest boy is married. We have a new baby coming in the family in September. We're going to be grandparents, and I'm ready. I've been ready for about 3 years, so I'm excited about that. We're going to have a new grandson, I'm sure. I have, I got to be honest. I'd like to have a granddaughter. If I had my druthers, I'd take a granddaughter, because we've never had girls. We've had two boys, and that'd be pretty exciting. Kent's 26 and been married 3 years. He's a school teacher locally down here in the Yucaipa area. He and his wife just bought a home, new to them, an old house, but new to them, and they moved in last Saturday, so they're pretty fired up about that. And they're delightful, delightful people who are involved in a wonderful church in Redlands and just enjoying life, and we're enjoying having them close, which I have never been to my folks since the day I got married. I don't mean close in spirit, but mileage-wise, we've been a couple thousand miles away, and that's been difficult. So nice to have them close. Then our youngest son just turned 20 last month and will be a junior at Azusa Pacific University this fall, and is a lifeguard here at Forest Home this summer. So don't get in any trouble in the water, folks. It could be bad news. No, he does very well. So anyway, he's a lifeguard here this summer and has been a neat part of our family. The oldest boy is an athlete, has been very, very heavily involved in football all through Pop Warner, high school, college, and some of you have heard all of that. And we spent a lot of years in football. Then the second one came along and was a musician, which was a whole new world for me. And suddenly I found myself going to football games to watch the halftime, which is a whole new world when you've always gone to watch the game. And our youngest one plays a trumpet and has been involved in music. And the older one kind of straight arrow in where he was going. The younger one to this day has no concept of what he wants to do and is much more like I was at age 20. I had no idea either and still I'm not sure, but have kind of banged around another 32 years. Then we have Tennille, who is our cockatiel, and I don't know why we have that bird, but we've had her 3.5 years, and she's a delightful bird, I think. I don't know how birds become delightful, but anyway. Then we have Felix, who is 9 years old. Felix is a black cat that kills everything in the neighborhood and is virtually hated by everything, including blue jays and rabbits, and he's just a tough cat that makes his way. Then we have another female cat that doesn't have a name. She just showed up, And she has four kittens, and they don't have names either. So if any of you are interested in some kittens, we have four that are ready to be given away. And then we have Red. Red is our dog. Our good dog that we had had for many years got killed recently. And that was sad. Got hit by a car, unfortunately. And but after it happened and I got over the shock of that, which took me, I don't know, probably 10, 15 minutes, I suddenly said to Carol, you know, we don't have a dog anymore. Every time we go on vacation, we had to get that dog taken care of. Now, 3 weeks ago, my wife runs every morning about 4.5 miles, and she came home, and she said, honey, come quick. You got to see what followed me home. So now we have Red, and Red is Red. And I'm not really attached to the dog at all. He's half, well, we don't know what he is. He looks half Cocker and maybe half Irish Setter. And he's really a cute dog, but not sure how long he'll be at our home. I've been trying to move him out. So that's pretty much the household of the Cranies. Our youngest son now has gone away to school, lives in dorms. Our oldest boy, of course, with his own home. And so Carol and I have really discovered what it's like to be alone again. And I want to tell you straight up, it's been the greatest last couple of years. We loved our kids, and they were great. I want you to know that. But, boy, I'll tell you, being alone has some great advantages. We can come and go anytime we want. Carol travels with me all the time when I speak now, and she's speaking with me now and a lot of stuff. And I don't know when we've had more fun. This past year, I've been the president of Christian Camping International, which a lot of you know. We've been all over the world, literally. We've been to the Far East, the Middle East, and Europe, and we've been a lot of places this last year. Carol went everywhere with me, and we were just laughing when we came home, being in Taiwan for a while. We came back, and we were smiling about the fact that on that whole trip, which lasted about 6 weeks, the whole thing, I don't think we had one serious argument in the whole 6 weeks on the road. And we were just smiling, saying, you know, I think after 28 years, we're getting this thing together. And so I just say to you, boy, it improves and it gets better and it's wonderful. And hang in there, because marriage is a great thing. I'm absolutely committed to it, and I'm committed to that lady. And I'm going to talk about that tomorrow morning, because I believe that's the issue of marriage right now, is commitment. And I want to hit that hard and strong tomorrow morning. So anyway, let me kind of jump off into something that will get us thinking and maybe give us a platform, not only to listen this week, to function with one another. Those of you here as couples have kind of an unusual week. Some of you have done this many times. For many of you, this is your first time ever at Forest Home. And I want to tell you something. We want to do some things for you this week. We want to take care of your kids part of the time so you get a little time alone together. We want to cook your meals and wash your dishes and babysit for you here and there and really try to give you some time, not only to get instruction, but to have a little time here and there just to walk together in the woods, just to talk together, to tell each other things that you ought to be telling each other every day, but a lot of times we don't in the familiar area that we live in our own homes. And I trust that out of some of the things we'll crank out in the morning, maybe there'll be a desire to say some things to one another that you don't often say, or need, at least not as often as you should. I pray that there'll be some times of maybe some confession of things that ought to be straightened out and things that ought to be maybe be redone. I pray that there'll be some times of praise that have gotten away. I pray that maybe you'll walk out of this week feeling differently about one another than you ever have before. Maybe there'll be a freshness to your marriage. I don't care how long you've been married, that there'll be a freshness to your marriage that maybe hasn't been there for a while. And you'll just be greatly encouraged because we've been together in this week. And not because of really what we've said in this room, but more with from what you have done with what we have said in the time that we have been together. So we'll jump off from there. Let me begin by reading something, and what I'm going to do this morning, I did it on Memorial Day weekend, kind of in preparation for summer for the Salisbury. I apologize. We'll do something new tomorrow, so hang in there. You probably need this anyway. So let me read to you a card that I asked my wife about a month and a half ago if I could read. This has been a personal card with me, and I just thought it might be a neat thing to read to you. About a year and a half ago, I got off of an airplane one day coming home from having traveled for a period of time, and Carol met me down at Ontario at the airport, and we were going through some just kind of really difficult times with one of our sons, and just really struggling in some areas, and we had cried a lot and prayed a lot and had great concern in some areas, and when I got in the car, Carol, you know, we kissed each other, and Carol handed me an envelope, as we were driving, we were going to drive over to the Red Lion Inn, which is right there by Ontario, and have a bite of lunch together. And so as we drove, I pulled this card out, and this is what I read. And I guess if I were to say, this is one of the things that keeps saying over and over to me what our marriage is all about, maybe this card would do that. And it says this. Part of it is a little thing that's on the front, and then part of it is what Carol wrote. And let me just read you the whole thing, and we'll start from there. I'm still learning about love. I want you to know that, so please be patient with me. When things go wrong or when I hurt your feelings, I feel terrible about it. We have so much to look forward to, and the time goes by so quickly that we should promise never to allow a misunderstanding to continue beyond a brief moment. Wouldn't it be great if we really all did that? We will deal with our concerns as they come up, and our love will just get better because we learn by doing and we grow by experiencing. We've learned enough already in 28 years to know that love is made up of all things. The good with the hard times, the quiet with the talkative times, and the questions with the answers. And even when I don't seem to know anything else, I know that you're the answer and the best thing in my life. I love you, Bob, with all of my heart, and I need you now as much as I've ever needed you in all of our marriage. We've been through some easy and beautiful times, and now we're struggling with some difficult times. God will see us through this. And I know that we will be stronger together because of it. I love you. I am committed to you, your wife and your partner. That probably said as much and probably says as much about our relationship and maybe where we see it at this point as anything I could say to you in the course of an hour or half an hour. And I read that over, and we sat a long time at lunch and talked about all of it. And I would just say this to you in regard to the two things she mentioned. He did, and we are. He really saw us through it, and I think we're much stronger because of our going through it. And so I encourage you in that area. Now, let me read to you some scripture, make a comment, and then we'll kind of move back. Great little section of scripture that I have often preached on, and I don't want to preach on it today. I just want to make a comment. And it begins in the fourth verse of the 21st chapter of the book of John. It's a very familiar passage of scripture in that it's the passage where Jesus appears to the disciples when they're fishing on the Sea of Galilee. They've gone away after the crucifixion, not totally understanding the resurrection, being very frustrated as they have been told to wait in Jerusalem. And finally, Peter just simply says in frustration, I'm going fishing. And several of the disciples said, we will go with you. And they went back up to the Sea of Galilee, and they began to do in the Sea of Galilee the one thing that they felt they really know how to do, and that's fish. Several of the men in the boat were fishermen. They were called by Jesus from those boats to go out and be fishers of men. So they go back, and they begin to fish in the Sea of Galilee, and they fished all night when Jesus appears on the shore. And it says, Jesus therefore said to them, well, it said, but when the day was now breaking, Jesus stood on the beach. Yet the disciples were not aware that it was Jesus. Jesus called out to them and said, children, you do not have any fish now, do you? He didn't ask them, he told them. He said, you don't have any fish, do you? You've been out there all night and you have nothing. And they answered him, no. And he said, cast the net on the right-hand side of the boat and you will find a catch. Two different times when I've been in Israel on that end of the Sea of Galilee, I have watched men cast the circular nets. Now they use those gill nets that run about 6 miles, but they still do some light fishing with circular nets. And it's fun to watch them cast those nets and see them just flatten out on the water, and then they let them sink and things buoy up and one side goes down, and they just sit there for several hours and let things swim into that, and they close it up and they pull it in. Well, if they fished all night on one side of the boat, obviously there would not be a large catch 4 feet away on the other side of the boat. That would not make good logic if you were a fisherman. You would move to another fishing ground. So he says, cast it on the other side. They cast, therefore, and when they were not able to haul it in because of the great number of fish. The disciple therefore whom Jesus loved, John, said to Peter, It is the Lord. No question immediately when the net is full of fish. It is the Lord. So when Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his outer garment, for he was stripped for work, and he threw himself into the sea. I don't want to make comments about Peter other than to say, whatever you want to say about Peter, with all the bad remarks he made, with all the mistakes he made, with getting out of the boat and sinking and all those things, the one thing that we know about Peter above everything else is that he wanted to be with Jesus. And at any point, that was his desire and that was his goal. So here, puts on his clothes, dives in, does everything a little bit backwards, swims to shore. He has not yet had any confrontation with the Lord since he denied him. He has not yet come into any confrontation, and I'm sure he knows that's going to happen. And he just can't wait to get there, probably frightened on the one hand, and yet terribly excited about getting to Jesus on the other hand. And he dives in, swims to shore. The other disciples came in the little boat, for they were not far from land, with about 100 yards away, dragging the net full of fish. So when they got up on the land, they saw a charcoal fire already laid, fish placed on it, and bread. Jesus said to them, "Bring some of the fish which you have now caught." Simon Peter went up, drew the net to land, full of large fish, 153, and although there were so many, the net was not torn. Jesus said to them, and notice his invitation now, "Come and have breakfast." None of his disciples ventured to question him, "Who are you?" knowing that it was the Lord. And then in verse 13, Jesus came, took the bread, gave it to them, and the fish likewise. Let me just set a stage for our homes. One of the things in this passage that really struck me a while back is what a marvelous, gracious host the Lord is. Now, is the Lord going to have a confrontation with Peter? Oh, yeah, finish the chapter and you'll find it. But you know what's interesting? When Peter comes to shore, his first shot out of the chute is not to reprimand Peter. Remember Peter when Peter said, "Lord, they may all deny you, but I will never deny you. I will die with you." And Jesus said, "Peter, before the cock crows, you'll deny me." And you remember Peter when he stood that night around that fire? And the ultimate one, there were three times, but the ultimate one was when a little girl came up and said, "You're a Galilean. You were with Jesus," and he swore with an oath and said, "I never knew him, and I'm not a Galilean." And the cock crowed, and there's a lot of debate on what the cock crowing was, but the cock crowed. And all it says in Scripture is that Peter went out and wept bitterly. He failed. Now, he's having a confrontation with the one whom he failed and to whom he made the great boast. Never exciting to come into that kind of a confrontation. But as he hits the beach, swimming, he sees a fire, he sees fish, he sees bread, and ultimately he hears the invitation. "Come, let's eat together, let's have breakfast together. I will host you for this breakfast." And when breakfast is over, and we've filled ourselves, we'll deal with the issue. And the conclusion of breakfast, they dealt with the issue. "Peter, do you love me? Feed my sheep. Peter, do you love me? Peter, do you really love me? Lord, you know everything and you know I love you." And ultimately he gets that marvelous thing from Jesus when Jesus said, "Peter, when you are old, people will take you and lead you in a way that you would not go. Peter, you're going to be a martyr for me. You're going to be such a powerful individual for me that it's going to cost you your life somewhere down the line." But the great thing that happens in all this is that Jesus becomes the host to this one who has really blown it, who has really wiped him out, who has really messed him up, who did not perform the way Jesus hoped he would perform, who did not act the way he should have acted, who did not talk the way he should have talked, who did not respond the way Jesus hoped he would respond. And yet when they hit, it's in a host-guest situation. And he invites him to be his guest and to join him for this marvelous thing. Let me ask you a question today as we begin this week together. As you live in your household as a husband or a wife particularly, are you a host or are you a guest in that home? I read a book a year ago that really triggered my thinking. And I think if Carol were here this morning, she would say that some things have changed in my life There's some other things she'd love to still see change, but she's been waiting 28 years. And probably we're not going to make it, you know. But there are some things that have changed out of a little thing that was triggered in a book that's got a lot of pages, but on one little page, there was one little paragraph that really caught my eye when that question was asked. Are you a host or are you a guest in your house? And as I begin to think that through, I begin to think about the fact of how often I am a guest in our house. I come home, I walk in, and I veg out. I just become a guest in the house. I'm not a host at all. I do not at all follow the example that Jesus set so often in hosting and in caring. Dr. Willard Beecher says this: most people come to their marriages believing that it is a box full of goodies from which we can extract all we will ever need to make us happy. Now, somehow, there's that. I marry a lot of people. I married my own son and daughter-in-law, which was a great thrill. But I marry a lot of kids, and I see them standing there at the altar, 21, 22, 23 years old, sometimes even a little younger. And I hear them, I see them looking at one another. I hear these vows they wrote. I listen to what they say. I see the look they have as they just kind of stare into oblivion. And in my mind, I always think you don't even have any idea what you're doing. I mean, you don't have any concept of what you're doing. I want to tell you something. I had no concept of what I was doing at all. When I said I do at age 24, and what I said I do to, I had no idea what that meant. I want to tell you I have an awful lot better idea after 28 years together than I did at that time. It breaks my heart when I see people bail out of a marriage in 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 years. They don't even know what's going on yet. They've not even gotten a hold of the issues yet. And somehow they've got this mystical box that didn't have the goodies in that they anticipated. I counsel people that have been married 20 years who are still digging in the box. And somehow the goodies that aren't in there are not making them happy, and I get statements like, well, I just don't love her anymore. What does that mean? Or I just don't love him. Our love, I just had a couple the other day in the office said, our love died. That was the statement. Love does not die. I don't even understand what that means, love died. But I think this is a great concept. We believe we've got a box full of goodies from which we extract all we need to make us happy. In reality, marriage is an empty box. There is nothing in the box called marriage. Marriage is the opportunity to put things in the box for as long as you both shall live. Marriage was never intended to do anything for people. People are expected to do something for marriage on a daily basis. And whether or not we're happy together, whether or not we're enjoying life together, whether or not we're having, quote, a great time together, depends on what we're putting in the box on a daily basis. If I'm not putting anything in, I cannot really anticipate getting a whole lot out. Romance, consideration, generosity, love are not in marriage. Those things are in people. And if people choose to exercise them and choose to put them in the box, then together we can take them out together and really enjoy them. Hosting or guesting, just a great concept that has triggered my head, and I hope when I'm done, you'll kind of smile and say, aha. It is always nicer to be a guest. When we're guests, we don't have anything invested, other than maybe a little bit of time. We don't have a lot of responsibility. We can be enriched. We can be entertained. We can be pampered. And somebody else kind of does it all. When you go to somebody else's house for dinner, probably about the only thing that happens in that evening is that maybe the wife, when you come in, if they're good friends, would say, anything I can help you with. And usually, unless you're really close friends and have dinner together all the time, usually the host or hostess will say, no, 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 everything is cared for, just relax, and we'll be ready to eat in a few minutes. Interesting? We're wonderful hosts to guests who come to our home. And yet sometimes within the structure of our households, we don't do well at all. Are we hosts or are we guests? Jesus said in Matthew 20, whoever wishes to become great among you must learn to be a host. Whoever wishes to be great among you must learn to be a servant. Must learn to serve. And whoever wishes to be first among you must be a host to all. Must be a servant to all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but he came to serve and ultimately did the ultimate service in that he gave his life a ransom for many. That's Christ's concept of the whole thing. If anybody wants to be first, you got to be a host. If anyone wants to be kind of up there, you got to learn to be a servant. You got to be a learn to be a sharer. You got to be a learn to be a giver. Even Christ himself chose to become the ultimate giver. Then this statement that was in the book in that same paragraph that really caught my eye. No marriage can accommodate two guests. In fact, I don't think any marriage can accommodate one guest on a regular basis. But every marriage has room for one more host. Every marriage has room for one more host. But if you're guesting in your house, and I think, guys, I think we tend to be more guilty of this than our wives are. I think we often will tend to come cruising in after a day at work, and we've kind of done our thing for the day, you know. And we kind of cruise in, and we kind of say, well, I need my time, you know. Your wife has just had it up to her eyeballs with the kids all day. They've been a pain in the neck. It's been the worst day she's had in 7 months. And we cruise in and guest it. And suddenly she has to not only host those kids that have driven her nuts all day, now she's got to host me. And that's tougher because I'm bigger. And I should know better. And I think wives can sometimes be guests in households when they ought to be hosts or hostesses. Are you a host or are you a guest? How do you function in your marriage? How regularly are you host? How regularly are you guest? Says an awful lot about where we walk from. Let me this morning give you three things that kind of say what hosts do. You could probably come up with 20 more. I just have three. Three things that a host does that really, I think, fit well into our marriages. First of all, a host or hostess will tend to initiate and build strong friendships. That's a lot of what hosting is all about. Why do we have people over to our homes for dinner? Why do we go out to places with people? Why do we choose to host people for a period of time? It's normally to build a friendship. It's normally to put together a relationship, to put together something that lasts for a period of time. That's why we do that. Hosts have that in their mind. Hostesses have that in their mind, to build a strong friendship and a strong relationship. There's a couple that come to Forest Home. Some of you know the Hoffmans who come to Forest Home, a Dutch couple. They've been coming here for years and years. About 3 years ago, they had their 50th wedding anniversary. And there was a lovely, lovely article in their local paper, a big article, probably four columns wide, and their pictures, and a beautiful thing that a young reporter did in an interview with them. And it was marvelous. And there's a little thing in there that I underlined in yellow because it struck me so much. When he was interviewing them, he discovered that for the 50 years they had been married, for 47 of those years they had worked in the same office together. Now, in anybody's mind, that does not gel. I mean, some of you work together and sometimes find that to be a very difficult thing to put work and home and all of that kind of in perspective. But they worked together for many, 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 many years. Well, in process, this young reporter said, I cannot believe you've been married 50 years and you've been working in the same office together. He said, my experience is that doesn't work. He said, and he said to Mr. Hoffman, he said, how do you make that work? And the answer is classic. Hoffman's answer was simply, he said, I don't really understand what you mean. He said, this lady is my best friend in the whole world. Why couldn't we work in the same office together? I mean, he put the thing right back on him. It's like, why would you even ask that question? He said, this is my best friend in the whole world. Why wouldn't we work in the same office together? Isn't that interesting? Best friends. How did you make it 50 years? We're best friends. How did Carol and I make it 28 years? We're best friends. Carol's the best friend I have in the whole world. I don't know of anybody I confide in half as much as I do my wife. The other statement I would give you is that when your kids are raised and gone, you quickly discover whether or not you're good friends. We have a couple that are friends of ours that we just met with last week who are in the throes of a divorce. They're in the throes of a divorce 1 year after their last kid left home. They have four children. You know what I found out in the conversation? They haven't had a marriage that's been worth a hill of beans for 12 years. They've just stayed together for the sake of the kids. You hear about the great little story I heard. You hear about the guy that is 98, and they've just celebrated their 65th wedding anniversary. And he files for divorce. And his neighbor comes over, and his neighbor's been married 63 years. And his neighbor says, "Harry, you filed for divorce." He said, "Yeah, we did." He said, "I can't believe that. You guys have been married 65 years. Why would you do that now?" "Well," he said, "we just decided we ought to wait till the kids died." Semi-funny, but kind of says that whole thing. But it's interesting, and I think one of the things Carol and I have been discovering the last year or two is that when your kids are gone, suddenly there's the two of you again. You're kind of back to where you began when you got married, only you've got 28 years behind you now, and you've either built a great friendship or you've destroyed the friendship you had, one or the other. And you spent those 28 years either really loving one another or just transferring love into the kids' lives. See, and if it all got transferred out, suddenly there's nobody to transfer to. And then you sit down with couples like we sat down with who are now hanging it up after 26 years of marriage. And that's frightening. So, first of all, a host initiates and builds good friendship. A recent survey surveyed 40,000 couples. I don't know who they were. They didn't survey me. I know that. But they surveyed 40,000 couples supposedly across the country, all couples that had been married 5 years or longer. So there weren't any newlyweds in the group. They asked, what are the most valued qualities of your marriage? Then they put these into a category of 20 and put them in order of how they were mentioned, like the most got first. And the three things that were mentioned most were interesting to me. Number one, the ability to keep a confidence was number one. You ever been in a home at a dinner when a husband or a wife said something that was terribly private? And it was very obvious that the partner was really shocked and hurt. Just the look. Nothing had to be said. See, that was a privacy that should have never been shared. There are things that belong to Carol and I that are ours. They're ours. They don't belong to anybody. They don't belong to our kids. They don't belong to you. They're ours. The ability to keep a confidence was number one in all those people surveyed. Second thing, commitment. Commitment. We're going to talk about that tomorrow morning. That'll be my number one item tomorrow morning, and I'm going to talk long and hard because I think it's the issue of what's happening in our country today. Commitment. Third thing, warmth, affection, physical love was third on the list. Third on the list. Not number one. Not what every guy dreams about when he's 19 or 17. See, it's not the issue. Keeping a confidence was the issue. Number one issue among couples is the ability to have things that belong to you. That's what makes you. That's what makes your marriage. That's what makes you a couple. That's what makes you private. That's what two flesh coming together and being one is all about. And so much of that has to do with how we function and how we keep those things. The sharing of activities together, spending time together, having fun together, counting on one another on a regular basis. Assuming the role as a host, we would simply treat our marriage partner as we would treat the most honored guest in our home. Let me give you a couple little things to think about. Let's just suppose you've invited over for dinner at night somebody who has been a good friend, but you really want them to be best friends. I mean, you just want them to be best friends. So you've invited them for dinner in the evening, and that day you picked up your new BMW. You've waited about 12 years to buy it, and you bought a new 528. And you've got it parked in your driveway, no plate on it, and you cannot wait till they get there to show your buddy that you got this new 528 that you guys have talked about 5 years. He swings in your driveway, something happens, I don't know what, but he nails the rear end of your BMW, kind of on the right-hand corner, and he crinkles the bumper all to pieces, and he also just bows the back panel. Just enough to kink it and break the paint. And you hear it from the house. You come just casually out the door. I mean, you don't run out, because you already figured he hit the car, because it was the only car in the driveway. So you cash out, and as he's getting out of the car, he's absolutely freaked out. I mean, he's just, and he's just going, I can't, he's starting to yell at you, I can't believe what I've done, I feel like a jerk, I'm so sorry. When I came in the driveway, and he starts giving you this giant explanation, and you just feel, he just feels awful. What would be the average response of us in this room? A, don't even think about it. Ah, oh, but he said, it's a new car. How long have you had it? Don't even think about it. I've had it an hour already. I mean, that sucker's an hour old already. Don't even think about it. He said, but look what I did. Hey. Then he says, I've got my insurance, but that doesn't, look what I've done. Don't even worry. It's my car. It's not my kids. It's not my wife. It's my car. Don't even worry about it. It's no big deal. It's okay for $4,000 or $5,000, I can get it fixed. It's not a big deal. I mean, it's just a BMW. I want to tell you something. For the next 30 minutes, most of us in this room would do everything we could to make that person feel comfortable and to make them feel that it was an honest mistake and it was not a big deal and we can solve it tomorrow. Let's don't even think about it. Just don't even let it be in our conversation tonight. Let's enjoy each other. Now, let me ask you a second question. You already know the other one, don't you? Your wife comes in the driveway. You bought her this 67 Chevy station wagon so she could go to the market. She just didn't want anything to go anyplace big, just wanted to go to the market. She comes in the driveway. As she swings up the driveway, your three-year-old starts to topple forward off of the seat. And she reaches her hand out to grab him so he doesn't hit the dash, and she smacks the back end of the BMW. Same damage, nothing different. You come out of the house, you hear it. You come out of the house faster than you've ever run in your life. I mean, and then the responses. I can't believe you would come in the driveway at that speed. Honey, Tommy started to fall off. Why wasn't he in his infant seat? Why wasn't he strapped in his infant seat? If he'd have been strapped in his infant seat, you wouldn't have hit the back. Look at the car. Look at it. You know what that's going to cost us? $5,000 right there on the back fender. And we'll absolutely, sometimes, now many of you would not respond like that. But there are some here who would. And we would just kind of explode everything out of our system. Now I want to tell you something. Let me just ask you a question. Who ultimately in your life is going to be more important to you? That friend who may a week from now move 2,000 miles away, or you might move 2,000 miles away, and that friendship is gone. I mean, you may write, you may see each other once a year, but they're gone. They're passing. All of our friends are passing. A few we have a lifetime, but very, very few. My best friends 10 years ago aren't even around here anymore. And yet the person who is the closest to us, is the most intricately involved in our life, gets treated not as a guest. Not as a guest. What about if your hubby comes home late for dinner? Let's suppose you have guests coming for dinner and they come an hour late. You fixed something really important that you needed to serve within 10 minutes after you finished it, and now 50 more minutes have gone by. How do you respond when they come in? Hey, we're so sorry we're late. We're just terrible. Don't even think about it. I just now got it ready. In fact, if you'd have come an hour ago, we'd have had to wait 50 minutes. I just got it ready. How about if your hubby comes home? Going to be there at 5:30 for dinner, and he shows up at 7. Ah. He walks in. Hi, honey, anything to eat? It's on the stove. It's in a pan. I threw it all together. If you want to heat it, you can, or just eat it cold. Interesting, isn't it? And yet that person is critical to our life, to our whole life. What if somebody in the family breaks your best piece of china? that's been in the family for about five generations. Uh-huh, wheels come off. What if your guest breaks that same piece? Oh, don't even think about it. Just an old piece of junk. We were going to have a garage sale. Now we don't need to. You broke it. Isn't it funny? We'll let them off of the hook. We let them off of the hook like that. And yet our own spouse or our own kids will be relentless on when they did the identical thing that a guest did in our house, who isn't even terribly important to our future in most cases. Hosts make great friends. Hosts in households make great friends of the rest of the household. Second thing that a host does, a host is a careful planner. I know sometimes when we have guests and it's going to be kind of a neat evening, an important evening, I just know to the effort, I know the effort that Carol goes to, and often I get involved in helping and even in the preparation because those people are important. And we want things to be right when they come. And we plan. I can remember times when we've sat down and discussed menu. We've discussed what we're going to have. Carol said, do you think it'd be better to have this or have this? What do you think? I know what you like, but what do you think would be best? We talk about all of those things. Why? Because we want to be good planners for the guests that come to our home. Marriages without the same kind of planning simply decay. Natural tendencies are to drift apart, not grow together. People don't naturally grow together. People naturally grow apart. And if we don't work at rekindling and redoing and planning and doing those things that keep the marriage fun, then somehow it begins to die. And when I met with this young couple who said after 2.5 years of marriage, our love died. Well, their love didn't really die. They just quit doing everything that they had done. We went back and talked about it. I said, tell me about all the things you did when you were going together. Then I said, now tell me, how many of those things are you still doing? Almost none. Everything that was critical to build the relationship has been junked. Now that we're, quote, together. And together we've grown apart. We got to be good planners. Good times do not just happen. Love notes left under a pillow. Things I find in my suitcase when I travel. Carol has to write those things. Somebody has to put them there. They don't just happen. A meal that is seasoned with love on a special evening usually is not store packaged. A candlelight dinner when there's nobody coming. Just the two of us. Somebody had to think of that. Somebody had to get the candles out. Somebody had to light them. Somebody had to set it special so that when I walked in, I went, whoa. And I know it's going to be a good evening. I mean, there's no question in my mind. It's going to be a good evening. Somebody had to make that plan. My wife had to think that through and do that. It did not just suddenly happen. You got to do it. That weekend that somebody planned away and made it a surprise. Somebody had to make a phone call. Somebody had to make a reservation. Somebody had to make a plan. When we threw the stuff in the car and went, and I said, don't ask me where we're going. You'll know when we get there. Ooh, those are fun. The anticipation, the excitement. What a weekend. What a great time. But it's got to be planned. You got to plan for it. Those things don't just happen. And one of the problems with all of our marriages when they get rutty is that we just kind of let it happen. And you can't do that. Little plots of ground do not grow pretty flowers. They naturally go thistles and weeds. You've never had to hoe your flowers out during the season, have you? But you've hoed a lot of weeds out to help your flowers do well. Uncultivated soil does not grow flowers. It just doesn't. It grows crud. And you got to fight the crud. And our marriage is the same way. Our marriage grows crud if we don't work at it. And somehow we've got to be that host. We've got to be that planner. An intimate, long-term marriage that gets warmer and better and more exciting is the result of great planning. We live in a society that is committed to variety. The Word of God is committed to intimacy and long-term relationship. And I want to tell you something. You've got an awful lot of examples out there who are living in variety. And I believe God is as displeased with it in 1985 as He has ever been in history. And when I see what's happening around me, it frightens the heck out of me. I've got neighbors in my own neighborhood who have had weird affairs with girls 20 years their junior. Dumb. Just dumb. And the whole society is saying variety. Variety is the spice of life. If it feels good, do it. There's a whole world out there that is saying that. Television says it over and over and over and over in almost everything on there. Is talking about variety and illicit relationships and how exciting they are. That's a bunch of garbage. Come to a singles conference at Forest Home and wade through one of those weekends with people who are struggling and dying out there, saying, man, this world is so screwed up out there. And the Bible is saying to us over and over and over and over, intimacy is the issue of our lives and our marriages, and it's for the rest of your life. Somehow we've got to be committed to that in all that we do and in all that we are. If you plan for things to happen, they will happen. If you don't, they probably won't. It's that simple. Third and final thing. A host considerately meets the needs of the guest. You know, it's funny, when we have people over, special people sometimes, I'll do 19 things that are really kind of corny. Check the temperature in the house. Is it a good temperature? I mean, we don't want it to be too hot. We don't want it to be too cold. Is it cold enough to have a fire in the fireplace to have, should we shut the heat off? How about the lights? Don't want the lights to be just kind of, a little dim, but not dimmy, you know. And put a little stereo music on, soft enough that you can kind of hear it, but not annoying. Kind of get the whole place set up to entertain guests. If you got several, you want to make sure they all know each other. We sometimes have some little hors d'oeuvres to just let people talk and visit for a little while. Then we have a lovely dinner. The whole evening is programmed to meet the needs of the guests, so that when they go home, they say, my, aren't the Cranings wonderful hosts? Weren't they delightful hosts? Didn't we enjoy our evening? That's what we hope for, isn't it, when we host someone? We don't go out and say, what a weird house. I mean, man, they had stuff set up really strange. What in the world were they doing? I never got to meet Harry, who was there all night. I don't even know who those people were. See, we would never do that. Why? Because somehow we want them to feel we were very good at what we did. We were careful in planning what we did. And we did it with a lot of class. And I think that's important to all of us, that we meet those needs and finally get that all done. Get a firm picture in your mind as we begin this week to see yourself as a host in your marriage and see your spouse as a guest. I want to tell you something. It'll make a difference on how attentive you are, how caring you are, how considerate you are, how generous you are, how loving you are, what kind of an initiator you are. It'll change all of that in your thinking if you view yourself as the host of your marriage or the hostess of your marriage. It'll change your whole thinking. And it'll keep you from just kind of vegging out in the midst of some awfully good things that are around you. Let me ask you these questions, and we're going to address these more specifically as the week goes along. If you really were the host, how would you go about meeting the social needs of your spouse? My guess is there are some spouses in here that are very effervescent people. And there are some other sides of those marriages that just are not that excited about those kind of things. How do you meet one another's needs in those? If you're a host, that's all you're going to be concerned about is meeting the needs of the other half of that relationship. What about sexual needs? If we really cared, would we not be more sensitive, more generous, more creative, less excusing, less blaming? If we really cared, and if we were really hosting in our own homes, would we not learn all we could to be the best we could be to meet the needs of that other person? Great statement I read a while back. The spouse who refuses to be host and provide for his or her partner's sexual satisfaction is really asking someone else to stand in and meet that need. And it happens every day. It happens every day. How about spiritual needs? If we're really hosting, would we not care about where our spouse is spiritually? I'll guarantee you there's some guys sitting in here and the wives have been involved in Bible study fellowship and a bunch of other things. You've become professional Bible people and professional prayers. And some of you guys have backed right out of sight in your home. You don't want anything to do with it. You won't pray with your wife. You don't do any of that stuff because it scares you to death. Because she's good at it. I want to tell you something. If you're going to host her and you know that that's an important part of your life, you're going to get involved in that. You're going to learn to do it. And it's not all that hard. We'll talk about that a little bit this week. But you're going to learn to do it. Why? Because it's important. She's the guest. And maybe the other way around, but more often it's the guy who suddenly dumps all the spiritual responsibility on his wife. Somebody's not comfortable there. Comfortable out in business, but not comfortable there. Hey, aren't you going to be more aware, more familiar with the Bible? More aware of how to pray and share together in spiritual areas if that's an important part of your spouse's life? You're hosting. They're guesting. That's a privilege. Jesus said in John 13, I have given you an example to follow. Do now as I have done to you. And that's after he had just gotten down and washed their dirty feet. He said, I gave you an example. I gave you an example of hosting. I'm not asking you to wash one another's feet. I'm saying go do like as I have done. Go be a host in the way I have been a host. Go be a hostess in the way I have been a hostess. And you'll be blessed. And I believe that's true. When this thing hit my head about a year and a half ago, I just began to turn through some things, and I haven't changed my whole life around, but I want to tell you, there are some areas that have changed. I used to fuss at Carol constantly about certain things. Just bug her. Just enough, not anything serious, just enough to make her irritated, so it wasn't fun. You know, every time you create a ruckus in your household, then you got to get it put back together. Doesn't that, you know, every time I do that, I get so bent at myself. I can ruin a whole evening at home by making one statement. Or I can come in and just give a look or do something stupid. And I can spend the rest of the evening trying to repair that when we could have had a wonderful evening together except for this dummy who did this weird thing that just wiped his wife out. I mean, just destroyed her. It only takes a sentence. It only takes a line or two. It only takes a look. It only takes an indication that you think she's stupid. You say, I can't believe anybody intelligent would do that. I mean, you only have to make one little statement like that. That's all it takes. And a whole evening is shot. Larry Poland last week, they got six kids and his wife shared a little bit one morning. They were in the family hour. And she made a great statement. Somebody asked, they had a little question and answer time. And somebody said, how in the world do you find time to do things when you got six kids? Her answer was classic. She said, one of the things Larry and I have discovered is, that when after we really learned to get along together and didn't fight a lot, it gave us a heck of a lot more time to get the things done that needed to be done. You just think about that. If you get in hassles a lot, you waste a ton of time hassling. You can get rid of that junk. You can have some great time together. So I encourage you, I want you this week, as we kind of crank through all the stuff we're going to talk about, get yourself in a host role. And every one of you could sit down today and just write down things where you host and where you guest. Some of you guys would have incredible lists on guesting. If you're like me. Now, if you're not like me, I love you. But I want to tell you something. I had a huge list of guesting things where I'm just a guest. I'm just a guest in the house. Good luck, Carol. You know, wish you the best. Make this baby happen. And I just kind of guessed out in the whole situation. Think about it this week. Are you a host or are you a guest? Think through the areas of your marriage. And as we work through some of the areas we're going to work through in the next couple of days. Keep asking yourself that question. Am I a host or am I a guest in this situation? How do I function? How do I act? How do I respond? And make that a part of your life. And we'll have a good time together. Father, thanks. Thank you for this time. Encourage us and help us to really share with one another and care for one another. Share things together in this week as we kind of move along together in the name of Christ. Amen.